Guest is Sam Bowman and Yanka Soderberg. Our engineer is Matthew Olson, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Robert Barncourt.
And I'm Grace Ann Smith. Coming up Friday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Positively Revolting. Guest host Linda Olson Osterlund will be joined from London by Andy Worthington, author of Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison. At 9, Beloved Community speaks with the theologian Matthew Fox about his latest book, A Way to God, plus a candid conversation about ecology, human rights, capitalism, and resistance. At 10, it's Chris Andre, host of Air Cascadia, headlines, news, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Rabia Yemen hosts Digital Divide and takes your calls to discuss the WikiLeaks emails, disclosures, and what would happen if your emails were made public. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate.
KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
While many people around the country were surprised by the election of Donald Trump as president, some analysts who were not surprised by his win say that the problem lies far deeper than Trump. Scott Crow is one such analyst who spoke with KBOO's News Today.
I am speaking now with Scott Crow, an anarchist organizer based in Texas. And Scott, this morning I was talking with David Rovics on the air, and we're talking about some historical precedent for what we're seeing now. And we kind of agree that there hasn't been a precedent in this country, but maybe something like Spain or Italy in the 1930s. And I wonder if you could talk from an anarchist perspective a little bit about what you feel is the historical import of what we're seeing in the national election.
To me, it's actually, I would bring it much more recent history and look at the Balkanization that happened in Eastern Europe after the fall and collapse of the Soviet Union, when you had despotic leaders who were put up by the Communist Party before the fall of the Soviet Union, and then after that you had some despotic leaders and some liberal leaders fighting it out, but very much a turn towards right-wing and fascism overall. And I'm speaking very broadly. I can't speak for every country that's happening in. But that is what I see happening here in the United States, that no matter who was going to win the election today in the United States, that basically the American public and the world were going to lose. Two of the most despised basically electoral politicians who have run for president in a long, long time. And in my 30 years of doing things, the only person I saw that maybe was hated worse, and that probably paled in comparison, was Ronald Reagan in the early 80s. And it has a lot of similar feel to it also, because if you think about the United States through the 80s, there was the rise of the white militia movement, but the neo-Nazi movement had grown hugely under Ronald Reagan, under his watch. And so I think that we are seeing a return to that, right? Having a black president for 8 years, we've already seen the return of the militias on a large scale, the anti-immigrant stuff. And then, that fool called Donald Trump was able to capture that zeitgeist of all of that. And I think that no matter who was, like I said, no matter who was going to win today, that the fallout was going to continue for a long time. It's changing the course of it. And what I hope is not happening from this perspective, it's not just the Balkanization where we're going to see groups continue to subdivide in the United States. That is my worst case scenario fear. But really what I think is that the elections, time and time again, remind us and show people that we cannot that we have to be more than voters, that we have to be more than consumers, and we have to be more than activists too, working on single issues or just the advocacy of to stop the tide, to stem the tide that's actually pushing us down and pushing marginalized people even further down. And I think that we have to realize that we have to stand up and fight in different ways than we have, and we have to engage in different ways than we had before. And even if we don't even know what the answers to those are, that we know that these systems continue to fail us and disappoint us at every turn, right? Even if Hillary Clinton had gotten elected, you know, the immigration issues would still be there. The white militias would still be on the borders, doing their own patrols, their own armed patrols, and worried about the conspiracy of guns being taken away. I mean, those are things that are in motion that weren't going to change today. And so what I really hope that people think about is not the fear and the sadness that we all have about grieving around this. I'll be clear, I do not vote, and I had no dog in this fight, but there are degrees of worse, you know. I often say many elections are just a choice between a hanging and a shooting, and these were definitely like that, but much worse, and the stakes were so much higher for so many people. But I think that we have to remember, just like many other countries where things were starting to deteriorate, Latin America in the 80s, the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, you're talking about Eastern Europe, you're talking about places in Asia where the neoliberal policies were failing them, that the similar things were happening. You have these reactionary right wing, and right wing doesn't even encompass it all, because there's reactionary right wing and there's conservative right wing. I mean, there's so many other flavors of it, but that these parties and these people like Trump ended up, gaining power, and they're all over the place. But at the same time, there's also been this amazing, amazing groundswell that's been happening all over the world for people who have been affected by capitalism or by neoliberal policies or whatever, however you want to call it, who are rising up and not just to fight against the government, to fight for their rights under a government or their piece of the pie under capitalism, but to actually say, yeah, basta, enough. We will not take this anymore. We will not do this. We will stand up and we'll begin to make it on our own the way that we see fit for our communities. You know, the Zapatista communities in Chiapas, Mexico, the landless movements in Brazil, the rice farmers in India who refused to use GMO farms and decided to burn, GMO seeds that burned their fields by the thousands of hectares, all through the 90s and the 2000s, to say, we will not submit to that. There's all these kinds of rebellions and resistance that are happening. It's just harder for us in the United States because, not because we have the greatest amount of privilege and the least amount to lose, generally speaking, as Americans, right? I mean, I know under each group has different challenges and oppression they have to face. But I'm just saying that there are people, there are openings at every turn. And if we start to see elections as disasters instead of just like war or economic or ecological, and then we begin to say, well, if elections are a disaster and they're never going to work, what is it that we can do? Because then it opens up possibility for us to do anything, because everything is on the table for us to do that, whether it's community gardens or building your own health clinics. You know, even though there's Obamacare that's out there, I mean, we still need more clinics. We need clinics on every corner. We need things that take care of the basic infrastructure of all of us. And I don't mean in isolated pockets. I mean, like y'all are in Portland, you need clinics and childcare places on every corner. And so if we treat things like a disaster and we say this is a disaster, how would we begin to react differently, or how would we begin to prepare and act differently instead of just reacting and saying we're sad and we're going to protest in the street? We need to share our grief, we need to share our rage, but there's so much other stuff that we need to do also.
And I wonder if you have a response for a commentator like Arun Gupta, who argued that Trump's campaign and his plan to make America great again actually is an ethnic cleansing plan, and that it's a position of privilege to be able to say that that you would not vote at all.
But voting is only one thing. If we're more than voters and we're more than consumers and we're more than activists, it's a straw man argument to say that. If you don't vote and you don't do anything else, then you're lazy. or you're ill-informed or things like that. That's the process where I disagree. I'm like, voting is the least that some people can do if you're not going to do anything else. But to say that wholesale blanketly for everybody else, those of us who choose not to vote, I would choose to pick up a gun. I would choose to use civil disobedience. I would choose to do many other things before voting because I've worked in and out of the system for 30 years, and I know what happens when we vote. They win every time. And it's not me that's losing as somebody who has some amount of privilege. It's not me on the losing end of that. It's the marginalized people, the oppressed people, the communities that have historically always been neglected. They're the ones that lose. And whether we vote or not doesn't change that. And it's only people who are locked into the ideology of you must vote because it changes everything are the ones that believe that because they make their careers on it. A lot of journalists make their careers on it. A lot of people want to make their careers on being the expert commentators of things. All I'm proposing is that if it's not working, what would happen if we begin to try something else? Many other things that we don't even know. An undeterministic politics, a politics that actually looks at root change, not just on a particular issue, but the way that we all engage and the way we engage our communities. And the way that we engage with other nations while we still have nation states, the way that we engage with our neighbors around the corner, city to city. What if we begin to actually ask questions? That's how things like the Zapatistas rise up. They didn't say, yeah, if you don't vote, you're a jerk and you're just using privilege. They said, voting doesn't work, and so we want to try something else. And so they rose up. And they didn't rise up to take arms over the state. They rose up to build their own power. And when they rose up, it wasn't all about arms. It was actually about rebuilding their communities to fit the world that they needed to see. The same with the landless movement in Brazil or what happened in Rojava. When people gave up on electoral processes, they began to open up many other possibilities. Now, the thing is, I'm not saying that any of these examples are hunky-dory and amazing and it's rainbows and unicorns. Nothing is like that. But also where we're at today is always reminds us of the failures of the state. It reminds us of the failures of the economic systems for the majority of people in this country. And so all I'm saying is, like, what if we took that chance and said, yes, I will stop doing that. I will stop shaming people about not voting, and I will actually take the steps to do something else that is not just being a voter, not just being an activist, and not being just a consumer. And that's much harder choices to make. And those openings are much, much harder. You know, like, I was part of this organization that was at Hurricane Katrina after Katrina, called the Common Ground Collective. And we could not have seen that coming before that, before the storm came to shore. And all we did was relief work. But we couldn't have said, hey, we're going to start all doing relief work. But when the need came, we had the possibilities and the openings. And we said, okay, we'll try these paths for a while and see what happens. So all I'm saying is that what if we say this is not working and we open the doors?
Hey, I have one other question for you as a Texan, someone there in Trump land, the state of Texas went to Trump. Here, people are trying to come to grips with why anyone would support Trump at all. And in something I noticed with the mock election among fourth and fifth graders that took place across the country, every kid votes, there was an interesting phenomenon in Texas, which is that Hillary Clinton won among fourth and fifth graders by more than twice, almost twice as much as Donald Trump. And I wonder, is that indicative of a coming generation that is kind of sick of politics as usual? Are they, as a fourth and fifth grader, it's kind of unusual to not vote, you know, what your parents vote, I would think.
For sure. Well, the thing is that I think the demographics are changing, but you have to look at, these are old machines. The Republican Party and the Democratic Party are old machines. And the Republican Party machine in Texas is super strong. It's not very big, but it's very strong. If you go to the precinct meetings and things like that, they'll have 30 or 40 people. And these are meetings that nobody would ever go to. Whereas if you go to the Democratic meetings in towns outside of Austin, there might be two people there or three people. And they've been coming for 15 or 20 years. you know, that's a problem. But what gives me hope about the fourth and the fifth graders is that they're thinking about something beyond. And if they're just shoved into the voting machine, they will be disappointed and become non-voters like the, like many other people who are just disillusioned with the system. But the hope is if we offer alternatives, not me, I don't have a great plan, but if the people around us, all of us that are smart and that are thinking about things and care about the world and care about the animals on this on the planet, including the humans, that we begin to think differently. When those fourth and fifth graders grow up, they will have other choices to think about beyond just voting, beyond being an activist, or beyond being a consumer. And then those possibilities will lead to revolutions that we have no idea about. And I don't mean violence, and I don't mean gun revolutions, but revolutions that really actually create root change. And that excites me beyond belief.
Well, thank you so much for your thoughts on this post-election day. Again, I've been speaking with Scott Crow, an anarchist and organizer based in Texas, and the author of Revolutionary Hearts and Molotov Dreams. Thank you, Scott, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on, and good luck out there, too. We'll keep holding it down in Texas.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:59. Up next, Rose City Native Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Winona LaDuke, speaking Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom at the University of Oregon in Eugene. Winona LaDuke will speak on nature's historic position as property and the international call to legally recognize nature's right to exist, persist, and naturally evolve. This global movement is dedicated to normalizing the notion of rights of nature. Again, that's Winona LaDuke speaking on the rights of nature, Saturday, November 19th at 7 p.m. at the EMU Ballroom on the corner of 19th Avenue and University Street in Eugene. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.